Greg Proops, hello.
I'm good. How are you, Stephen?
I am very good. Thank you very much for a few minutes of your time, and congratulations on the new book.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Could I ask you a few questions about one of my all-time favorite TV shows, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Of course.
Well, I've been a fan since the original British series, and a question that I don't think I've ever had the answer for, and maybe you can help me out here, with you and Colin and Ryan. How did the North Americans get cast on the original British series?
Well, our producer, Dan Patterson, went to the University of Chicago, and he was a bit of a Yankophile, if you'll pardon the expression, and he loved American culture, and so when I think he put it on in 88 on the radio, the next year when it went on telly, he came to America and started auditioning Americans to put on the show. And so I got on then, and then Ryan and Colin got on, and the show ended up being dominated by North Americans. And now, of course, it's just on American TV. But by the last season we were doing in England, there was like one English person in the cast. So that's kind of how it happened. It was a organic evolution.
Well, that's awesome. One of my all-time favorites. I can sit and watch YouTube and watch the classics like Tim Conway and Harvey Korman go at it on the Carol Burnett Show.
Yeah.
And there's also several of my favorites of Whose Line, which I could just watch over and over and still, as you pardon the pun, LOL. Sit, Stand, and Bend Over has always been one of my favorites. And I could just sit and watch the you and Colin and Ryan go at it, and it's the funniest thing ever. Is that one of your favorites? What would be your favorites over all the years of Whose Line?
I like film and theater styles where we have to change genres all the time. That was always my favorite. We don't do it much anymore, but I really love that one. And in the old days in the English show, we used to do full-on musicals where we'd all get up and do a musical together. And I always thought those were very exciting because it was a tightrope, you know. We had 5 minutes to do a whole musical, and we would do it. And so those are kind of my favorite ones.
And you and Clive Anderson had such a bounce back between the two of you. Was it as much fun with Clive being the host of the show?
Well, you know, Clive has a lot of issues with anger and problems with height and his baldness, the fact that he has no neck and whatnot, and his shoulders come right out, his head comes right out of his shoulders. Clive and I are going to do the West End in London this June, if you want to come to England.
Oh.
We're going to do a couple of weeks with the English cast of Whose Line, and so we'll be doing a live Whose Line show in London.
That would be
Clive and I
perfect.
Are reuniting. We did last year in Edinburgh. We did a couple weeks in Edinburgh together, and the same magic was there. With Clive and I snuggling up against each other. He's still resentful that we won World War II.
Oh, that is awesome. That would be worth any price of admission just to see that all over again.
Well, then I'll be sure to charge you extra much.
Dang it. I should have kept my mouth shut.
Uh-huh.
How in the world did you get the voice work as a pod race announcer in Star Wars Episode I, for crying out loud?
Well, I was working in Edinburgh at the time at the Edinburgh Festival doing stand-up, and they needed some American voices for the pod racer, and they shot the picture in England. So Scott Capurro, who's the other pod race announcer, is also from San Francisco and a very good friend of mine, and we went in and auditioned together in London, and we got it. And then we shot it in England, and George did all the work for that movie. Oh, George. I get to call him George. I worked with him. George Lucas. Overseas. So that's how that worked out.
When it actually came out in the theaters, were you as in awe of everything when it first came out?
Well, I was excited to do the movie, I'll tell you that much. I like Star Trek better than Star Wars, and I know that's
awesome yeah.
to say since I'm in the Star Wars universe. I should say that I like Star Wars better because Star Trek's never given me a job. But I get letters every week from Denmark and Norway from completists who want autographs from every member of the cast.
Oh, that's great. Well, let's talk about the book for a few minutes. I tried to wrap my brain around the smartest book in the world, which is, I guess, all stems from the podcast. And how exactly did the book come together for this to happen this way?
Well, I've been doing the podcast for a while now, like 4 years, and it's called The Smartest Men in the World. And so we took all the topics that we talk about on the podcast, like baseball and movies that I like, books that I like, records that I like, vodka, drugs, feminism, history, all the stuff we talk about on the show, baseball, and I kind of stuck it all in the book together, and then we tried to sift it through and sort it out and see how we could make it entertaining for reading as opposed to listening to, and there you are. Although we've done a books on audiobook as well, and it's 7 hours long.
Oh, my.
You can drive from Evansville to Nashville and all the way back again.
And then some.
And never change the record.
And then, as you spoke, baseball is themed throughout the entire book. And I'll talk about some of the all-time baseball teams you mentioned here in just a little bit. But I am assuming baseball has been very, very good to you.
It absolutely has. I love baseball. I'm a huge fan. And I'm a San Francisco Giants fan, so I'm in my boomtown boom time of my fandom because we're so good the last few years. And it's just something my father used to take me to games when I was little, and there's a chapter on that, too, about how I got exposed to it. I mean, I said the trick for an author is, how do you make baseball interesting to people who aren't white middle-aged guys? And, you know, because there's lots more sports that are more exciting now, and I think kids grew up playing soccer and basketball and whatnot. And what did Chris Rock say? Baseball's demographic is the Tea Party at this point, you know. So the trick is to make it interesting, and I think it's the personalities of the players and the game itself. Never the owners. The owners are horrible.
And you have all these all-time baseball teams based on different groups of people. You've got bombshells. That was very good. You did a fine job on that. You've got the actual baseball team, all-time controversial team, women in history, dictators. What was the hardest one maybe to come up with over all these lists?
They were all really fun to come up with. I couldn't. The thing about the bombshell one was my editor told me, why don't you write a chapter on bombshells? You have to define what a bombshell is. And I couldn't do it. And I was freaking out. And I called him and I said, I'm not getting this. And he said, make it a baseball team. And then it all came together immediately. So having the structure of the baseball team allowed me to go in a bunch of different directions. How do you make dictators funny? You don't. They're not funny. But when they're on a baseball team, they are funny. So it kind of worked as a jumping-off point for me to be able to do all these things. You know, the all-time Roman Emperor team and whatnot.
And it's a very good book. And much success with this. And hopefully we'll see some more Who's Line. And what else is coming up in the very near future?
Well, Who's Line's on its third season. We're on right now on the CW, so you can watch us every week. And then, like I say, I'm going to London in June. And we're going to do Who's Line live on the West End. And I'm all around the country with this book for the next month.
All right. Good luck with everything, sir. And very nice to be able to talk to you for a few minutes today.
What a pleasure. Thank you, Stephen.
All right. Thank you.
Cheers.